Dustin Poirier and Conor, the Notorious McGregor, will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier evened the score in January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99, or sign up to get UFC 264 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for $89.98. Visit ESPNPlus.com/MMA Junkie. That's ESPNPLUS.com/MMA Junkie.
Junkie Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Monday. Excited to be with you for the next hour. We got a fun show here. We're going to take time to recap the three events that took place this past weekend in those big leagues. PFL 2021 Week 6, we had women's lightweight and men's heavyweight, along with a couple of important bouts in that featherweight and lightweight division. It's all settled. We all know who the semifinalists, well, at least I do, know who the semifinalists are going to be for all of the six divisions in the Professional Fighters League. Now, they're going to compete in the semifinals in August. And the finals are in October. Slightly different schedule. If you recall last year, they finished up things on December 31st. It's a little bit different this time. And there's only four semifinalists that make the playoffs in each division. And then the two finalists in October. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Bellator 261 took place on the same night. Big fight there with Valentin Moldavsky defeating Tim Johnson to become the Bellator interim heavyweight champion. Moldavsky, I'm sure, at some point will unify with undisputed champ Ryan Bader down the road. Ryan Bader right now actively involved in the Bellator Light Heavyweight Grand Prix. And then, of course, on Saturday night, we have UFC Fight Night 190, headlined by more heavyweight Ciryl Gane versus Alexander Volkov. Dominant performance by Ciryl Gane. Volkov's had some moments, but I would say just Gane overall was probably in charge of three-fourths of that fight. So credit to him. He's now a top contender in the UFC, still undefeated, and now racking up those names. That's how you get closer to the champ. So we'll definitely talk about those three events, and we'll also talk to Max Griffin and Tim Means today. Tim Means just won this past Saturday over Nicholas Dalby on the same card as Gane and Volkov, UFC Fight Night 190. And then we have Max Griffin coming up in a couple weeks at UFC 264. That's the next UFC event. It's here in Las Vegas. Supposed to be the biggest event of the year. That's headlined by Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor. On that card, Max Griffin will be facing Carlos Condit. So lots to talk about here for the next hour. It's MMA Junkie Radio, and I just lost Goz. I think I better just keep talking because I don't see Goz. Goz just disappeared on me. I heard him pop in and pop out. I don't know. He'll give me a heads up right now, but it looks like I'm still live, so I'm going to keep talking. Hang on a second. Goz, am I still live? All right, so I'm still live. He's having computer problems, and apologies for starting about a minute late or so. His computer just shut down on him. All right, so on Friday night, we had PFL 2021 Week 6. Got to get it straight because they've been fighting on Thursdays. And in that particular event, we had a lot of action in the women's lightweight and men's heavyweight divisions. Let's start at the top. Kayla Harrison got a big, big win. Dominant. I mean, Cindy Dandois, I don't think had much, honestly. We didn't expect too much because Cindy Dandois just never really competed that I remember as a lightweight, 155. But here's the thing. The reason we all had to watch was because, A, Harrison's got a little bit of that Mike Tyson mystique, you know, where she's just destructive, man. She may not knock you out cold, but she's going to wreck you pretty good. Maybe break your arm if you don't tap quick enough. I did see Cindy, you know, holding her, I think it was her left arm, but she's starting to hit people very, very hard. She's just so confident, too. And when you're undefeated, I think you basically think you're unstoppable. So that's why you tune in. But Cindy Dandois, and I know I beat you guys to death with this, she does have three wins that just are amazing. Marluce Conan, who was a Strikeforce bantamweight champ at one point. She had Yorina Bars, who I believe is undefeated as a kickboxer. She's even beaten Chris Cyborg, for crying out loud. I was there. It was in Vegas. It was on Lion Fight. That was in Muay Thai. But in MMA, I mean, she's solid fighter. Tall lady, too. Nasty. She's a head of security at a club in Amsterdam. She's awesome, man. We got to meet her, and she told us some cool stories. And then she's also beaten Megan Anderson, who just competed for the UFC women's, by the way, title. Of course, it wasn't her best showing, but who looks good against Amanda Nunes nowadays? But still. So Cindy Dandois has found a way to win, and so you have to respect that. And so that's why we tuned in. But it was nothing for Kayla Harrison. Kayla Harrison won in the main event. In the co-main event, Anthony Pettis lost. This is his second loss in a row. He's out of the playoffs for PFL. He went for it, folks. He needed to win in the first round to qualify automatically or the second round to create a tiebreaker. And I'm not even sure if he would have won the tiebreaker, but I'm pretty sure he would have. But he didn't because, A, he didn't win the fight at all. I thought he did, but the judges gave it to his opponent. But they once they went the distance, we just knew at that point it was just a matter of finishing the last 5 minutes. But basically his playoffs were over. Welcome back. Goes, you all right?
Yeah, I'm just working on a couple things here and there. My the laptop I normally do the show from, I couldn't get into StreamYard today.
Did it take a dive on you?
A little bit, yeah. Or, well, I mean, the program itself did it, so I just want to.
Okay, but not as in you may need a new laptop later today?
No, StreamYard for some reason just wasn't working on that particular laptop. That was weird.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. All right, so talking a little bit about PFL. Should I just keep talking or are you in?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, any thoughts on Kayla Harrison over Cindy Dandois on Friday night?
They just weren't on the same level. It's a different planet almost, you know. It was a very dominant performance by Kayla Harrison. It's something that we're used to saying, but she's kind of got that Ronda feel where I guess we would always relate Ronda to Mike Tyson. Like, you weren't always there for the opponent. You just wanted to see the destruction. And that's what Kayla Harrison's doing right now. She's just kind of rolling through, and it's still kind of a good time to watch her do that. But boy, these paychecks that she's getting, they're going to need to find her something a little bit more challenging, because she just completely ran through Cindy Dandois. And I think we all know there's something special there, because we've seen her in the Olympics. You know, we've seen how quickly she's transitioned to mixed martial arts. But we want to kind of have a little bit more of an estimate where exactly she's at in the scheme of everything.
Share your thoughts on Anthony Pettis against Rosh Monfio. Who did you think won? What did you think of Pettis' effort and, you know, all that stuff?
Well, I thought Pettis, he tried. You know, he did more. There's just something's lacking right now in Anthony Pettis. And every time you interview him, He's very positive, and it seems like he knows what it is, and he's making the adjustments for it, but it's just not translating fight night. I think I just brought up Mike Tyson, but one of the things about Mike Tyson was when people just stopped being afraid of him, they had a lot more success against him. And I think that's kind of one of those things that's happening with Anthony Pettis right now. Is I don't know that the guy that stands on the other side of Anthony Pettis fears him as much as they used to. And Anthony threw a lot of power punches. He had great movement. Like, I thought he looked better than he did in the last fight. It just wasn't enough. It's just not being enough. And there are moments, I think, where you can kind of point back to fighter IQ a little bit and go, oh man, you shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done that. But yeah, I don't know what to do with Anthony Pettis right now.
Well, the last fight was fun. Credit to Rosh Manfio, who got the win. And, you know, I think he was being overlooked. Maybe I even did that. I really thought Pettis was going to get the win and go for it. And the first couple minutes, he was going for it. His straight 1-2 was probably the nicest thing I was seeing. He's got great kicks, but I don't know. He's probably a little slower, and he's got it. Okay, he's precise with his strike. He throws really nice strikes. He has great techniques, but there's a lot of fighters that can hit you or kick you or maybe even knee you. And not necessarily be on the button, but still knock you out. You know what I mean? Those punches in the back of the head or the temple. There's just some people that have so much of that power that they can be inaccurate, still hit you, and still wobble you or knock you down or maybe finish you. And that's that. Or they follow up and finish you. But Anthony Pettis, it seems like, has to be pretty precise because he doesn't have as much power as maybe some of the other ones that maybe they can look back out of 20 fights in their career and go, whoo, one or two of those, you know, I didn't really touch somebody's chin like I should have, but yet they still went down. And then another thing that complimented Anthony Pettis' game was his jiu-jitsu game. You know, it's how he won his title over Benson Henderson in the UFC, but the jiu-jitsu can sometimes just be nullified so much unless you have your top game going, which obviously requires wrestling or for you to have, you know, beautiful tosses or trips. And Anthony Pettis just doesn't really have that. So that along with age, and I hate to make too many excuses because then it takes away from Manfio. Again, even though I thought Pettis won, I was happy that Pettis went for it. It's one thing that I enjoyed about PFL was even Palmer, you can see a lot of these guys were definitely a lot more active in fights because they needed it. You know, they needed it to get to the playoffs, which is where most of that paper gets stacked. But they came up short, you know. So I guess now I'm obviously segueing to Lance Palmer in the featured bout against Movlid Kabulayev. I love Kabulayev's kicks, you know, along with his striking and wrestling. He's the overall package. He's never lost. He's only got one draw. And Palmer's really only lost to top fighters. He's a two-time champ at PFL. He should be proud of his run at PFL, but it all comes to an end. Both him and Natan Schultz, this happened a few weeks ago for Schultz, they're out, so they won't get to enjoy that million-dollar payday that, who knows, you may get used to because they kind of really were dominant along the way. They didn't just taste too much adversity.
Mm-hmm. That's the weird thing about that night was you see Lance Palmer, who was so dominant, and then you see a guy like Anthony Pettis that I don't want to say – I mean, at one point in his career, he was dominant, but you expected more out of him, right, in this PFL run that he's on. I think some credit has to be given to their opponents, too, because their opponents really did rise up to the occasion. You know, that was a tough fight. Lance Palmer, both these guys, they got to figure something out. I'm pretty sure we'll see them back next year. I hope we do. But something has to be done, some kind of almost major change, because both guys just have not looked like themselves in this PFL and, well, this year.
One thing I can tell you is I think I prefer a longer season with the extra either an extra regular season, right, I almost want to say game, fight, if you're only going to have semifinals and finals, mm-hmm. or a qualify and you have quarterfinals, one or the two. Now, this was a special year where I think they just shortened it. You only had two fights to get in and then the fights, you know. But that said, look, let me go over the standings. This is the featherweight standings. The ones that qualify are Brendan Loughnane, Chris Wade, Bubba Jenkins, and Movlid Kabulayev. Loughnane's going to fight Kabulayev and Wade is going to fight Jenkins. This one's easy. It's 1-4, 2-3. All the fighters went 2-0. So really, there's nothing to argue there. Shamer Marias got close. He went 1-1, but he had a second round finish in one of his fights that allowed him to get 5 points, and that's why Kabulayev got by with 2 wins at 3 points each over Shamer Marias' 1 win for the second round stoppage. But if you go 8 deep here, you'd have someone that's 0-1 qualifying for the quarterfinals. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure I want that. And I don't know what you do. Like, if you didn't have a win, we're only going to go six, and the top two will get buys. You see what I'm saying? It gets too complicated. But I think if you give them three attempts and you just do away with the quarterfinals, but only four make it, then I think things can shake out a little bit more, especially if someone had whatever type of incident. You know, I don't know that we're going to say this too often, and that's visa issues and COVID, you know, COVID protocols or whatever. Because remember, it can be your teammate or someone in your camp, and it shuts down everything, even though they had, you know, 17, 10-day bubbles out there, and they tried their best to keep everyone safe. Stuff went down. You know, visa issues, not necessarily because somebody's in trouble. I'm talking about because certain countries are dealing with COVID and there's just no in and out. Our uncle Tito is stuck in Peru for 20 days. He was in Lima trying to get back to the United States. Had everything in order, but I believe, Go, I'm sharing this with you, I'm airing out country, our family stuff. He forgot his proof of COVID test that he took. He got confused and had his vaccine shot proof. I don't know. My uncle can be a little bit of an airhead sometimes, and he blew it. So by the time he was trying to, you know, get an emergency one or get one done, it just didn't pass, and he got stuck. So he wasn't able to come down here. But anyway, the point is that type of stuff is still happening. I don't know if by 2022 it'll still be happening. But, again, if you're not going to have the quarterfinals, then you need to give us, I think, three attempts, you know, to really, really see who the best four are. Who knows? I mean, the PFL usually gathers themselves together as a team and goes over all the scenarios and then usually comes up with really nice adjustments. Go ahead.
Let me ask you this, though, because I'm all for that, too. I wish there was a little bit more as well. But if there is more, does that mean you're going to have more instances where there are fighters that are fighting that know they can't make it, that are just kind of mathematically eliminated, making it not as interesting?
No, because of the first round finish. Because you can get you can get 6 points in just one fight by finishing somebody in the first round. That comes into play again. I don't believe that someone with one fight who gets one win, six points via one win, and that's a first round stoppage, should beat somebody that got two solid wins, even though they went to a decision. I don't like that tiebreaker. And frankly, I looked at the PFL standings and I'm confused if that even is it or if it's vice versa. But regardless, you know, that's always in play. So you could have three regular season fights scheduled. Let's say for one reason, we'll call it injury, you can't make it to one of them. You still have two times where you can get 12 points out of two fights. Or maybe one finish in one fight and the other one goes to decision and you get to nine. You know, it's interesting. Let me go over the rest of the standings and then we'll move on to Bellator. We got 12:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 a.m. Pacific. We'll be talking to Max Griffin, who faces Carlos Condit at UFC 264. He'll be followed by 12:45 p.m. Eastern, 9:45 a.m. Pacific. Tim Means, who just defeated Nicholas Dalby at UFC Fight Night 190. In the heavyweight division, Bruno Capoloza, Dennis Goldsoff, Ante Delizia, and Jamel Jones, they advance. With 5 points left out is Brandon Sales. Henry Fajeda had 4 points, but he would have had six if not for what happened with Fabricio Werdum getting an appeal, and so that fight went to a no contest, and he wasn't able to get his full points. So that's kind of unfortunate, and, you know, I don't know what to say. Most appeals don't stand, honestly. I was shocked when that one did, and they did it so quickly, but they made the decision, and that's that. But I don't know. Kind of thought he got the most difficult draw on paper, and he came through, so I don't understand why, you know, he shouldn't be the playoffs somehow. But anyway, in the light heavyweight division, Antonio Carlos Jr., a.k.a. Shoeface, him, Cesar Vejeda, Martin Hamlet, and Emiliano Sordi, the former champ, they advanced. Corey Hendricks with 4 points and Chris Camozzi with 3 points. Tom Lawler with 3 points. Jordan Young with 3 points. They're left out. The lightweight division, Loic Radziwanov, Clay Collard, Roush Manfio, and Alexander Martinez, they advance. Left out in the cold would be, with 3 points, Nathan Schultz and Martin Held. Olivier Abin Marcer only had two, and Ahmed Aliyev had three. And finally, in the women's lightweight division, sorry, I skipped the welterweights, Zhao Zaffarino, Roy McDonald, Ray Cooper, and Magomed Karamov, they advance. Left out in the cold is Sadabu C and Nikolai Alexakin with 4 points. Women's lightweight division, Larissa Pacheco, Kayla Harrison, Jenna Fabian, and Taylor Guardado advance. Left out at 3 points each is Mariana Moraes and Caitlin Young. But what I like there is that all of them went 2-0 regardless of the points in the women's lightweight division. We had a 1-0 sneak through in the welterweight division. So off one fight, that person was able to get through. What are you going to do? Pacheco will not be fighting Kayla Harrison. She's the number one ranked fighter. She's facing Guardado. Harrison fights Fabian. Zaffarino fights Magomed Karamov. Cooper fights McDonald. That's an awesome semifinal. Maybe my favorite one. Radzibov fights Martinez. And I like Martinez, by the way. Collard fights Manfio.
That can be good. That's a good matchup.
Hardy and Cesar Fajeda fights Martin Hamlet. If you're wondering who Cesar Fajeda was, remember that was Vitor Belfort's protege back in the day. I believe he took down one of the toughs in Brazil. Capelazo faces Jamel Jones, and Ante Delizia, he'll be fighting Denis Goltsov. So a little bit of the thing that stood out to me was, you know, no Justin Willis, no Fabricio Werdum, no Muhammad Usman, no Lance Palmer, and, you know, Nathan Schultz and a few of the ones that we went through. But the results figured it out. You know what I mean? The results is what dictated here. No politics. Could one of those guys or gal be on standby if something were to happen to one of these semifinalists? Of course. You know, I don't know what system the PFL will use. I guess to remain fair, you would use the point system. But I don't know. I don't know what's in their constitution, if you will.
I think it's just something that's going to continue to evolve. I think every year we've asked Ray, like, even before the year's done, are you already kind of getting a feeling of what you need to change, what you need to tweak? And I think that's probably one of them. Because, you know, it's, whatever they decide, I understand. What I don't understand is that even the fighters didn't really know. You know, that's kind of odd. They should know those types of things.
They should, but fighters are lazy, dude. Fighters are lazy, and they whine and go, "I didn't know," you know. And the fans will always side with the fighters. But now that kind of goes for all athletes. I see a lot of, like, for example, in the Clippers Suns game, it was game two, and a lot of people, including yours truly, all right. And I know basketball pretty well. I didn't know that when the Suns inbounded the ball, somebody could have stood at the cylinder and on the downward trajectory just blocked it, right? Because there's no goaltending on an inbounds play. So really you could have, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, instead of guarding the inbounder, because he's like 6'11 or so, he could have maybe just stood there by there, and because they only needed two. They didn't need three. You know, so but somebody could have just basically slapped that down and shut that down. So, you know, I don't know that a lot of players don't know that. Maybe sometimes coaches don't know that. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, communicate it to the fighters in written and verbal and make sure they know, because when they pipe up, man, it makes the promotion look silly.
A little bit, yeah. But overall, so far, I mean, this has been a blast for me. I've had fun covering it.
I liked it. That same night, Valentin Moldovsky defeated Tim Johnson to become the Bellator interim heavyweight champion. He'll now face Ryan Bader at some point and unify. Bader's the undisputed Bellator heavyweight champion. However, Bader's involved in the Bellator light heavyweight Grand Prix. So until he's eliminated there, or if he should win it and then with the appropriate time off, you know, this fight could possibly be a year away, man. I don't know. It could be a year away or 6 months away. It's I get frustrated at the Bellator heavyweight division. These champs, and I know Bader's a champ right now, but he was, and it's that along with just them not addressing the heavyweight division. And it's not just or Bellator or seen it in the UFC, it just can make a division stall so much. But regardless, we got ourselves an interim champion. He's 11-1 overall. And he beat Tim Johnson. Tim Johnson had some good moments. Looks like he came in shape. He has some heavy hands, and he was putting them on Moldovsky, but Moldovsky was able to take him. You know, he basically took Tim's best shot, and he basically outworked Tim Johnson. So congratulations to him. Any thoughts there?
Well, I thought he was just kind of one step ahead. You know, like, I think even watching it, you could kind of tell what Timothy Johnson was about to do. You're right. He came in great shape, showed a great chin. He landed some good shots, but at some point, I think he had to realize, even though there are some positives in what I'm doing, this isn't going to win me the fight. And I don't know that the adjustments were made to change that situation for him. And it's kind of tough, you know, on the fly in a five-round fight. I get it. I think he probably did make some fans, though, in a losing effort where going in, I don't know that Timothy Johnson was the most popular guy. But I think he made a lot of fans in the way he fought, the pride that he took into the ring. So I think it's going to end up probably being a good – yeah, I think it's going to be a little good thing for him. And hopefully if he can just shore those things up, bounce back, I don't see why he can't be back in the mix fairly quickly.
He was bleeding, and then he was egging him on at the very end, which isn't very Tim Johnson-like. But, you know, I guess the best got – he got the best of him. And I think towards the end, that's the kitchen sink, maybe lulling them to come in and you can land a big right. Who knows? But Tim really did put in the work. You know, he doesn't have a statuesque physique or anything like that, but the guy told us he was running 5 miles quite a few times a day, you know, some of it in this desert heat. He really wanted to be in shape, and he fought till the end. Had a nice run there at Bellator. But, you know, it's not a deep stable, so he can probably get a shot to come back. But what would have been interesting was if Extreme Couture could have boasted a Bellator heavyweight champ and a UFC heavyweight champ. They came up a little bit short there. Of course, Ngannou is out of Extreme Couture now, and he's the UFC heavyweight champ. So that's what I was referencing there. Liz Carmouche, boy, that don't doubt her, man. She's been doing it for a long time. She was successful as a bantamweight, successful as a flyweight now, and this is Strikeforce, UFC, and Bellator. This is now her third win at Bellator in a row, and she defeated Watanabe. I'm going to butcher her first name, Kana Watanabe. I almost said Kata Watanabe. Kana Watanabe gave her first loss, and now it's three in a row for Liz Carmouche, and so maybe that'll get her a shot at Juliana Velasquez. But she's got a lot of good wins along the way. She's only lost to the best, you know, like that title fights against Rousey and Shevchenko. And by the way, she's 1-1 against Shevchenko. Don't forget, there's this fight down in 2006 or 2008 when she beat Shevchenko in Oklahoma when they were both younger. So, like I say, congrats to her. She got the job done. I mean, that was beautiful. Standing TKO, basically.
Yeah, I was thinking about her and what she's been able to accomplish in her career. If you were to go in her basement or wherever she has all her memorabilia or just the storyline of her career, she has some pretty big things to boast about. Places she's fought, fighters that she's gone up against, the spotlight that she's been in different situations. She definitely needs to be very proud of her career. And you can't count her out. That's the one thing that I think that you could say over and over and over about her career is you just can't count her out in fights. So this could be something pretty special. It could be a real special run. But she's a person that really deserves it because she's one of those girls kind of like Miesha Tate that was stuck in the kind of in the middle of when MMA for females started booming a little bit more. They had already put in some time, and you felt like maybe they weren't going to get rewarded because things were just moving so quickly. But so she's kind of one of those girls that's in the middle. I would love to see her capture a title and just look overall at her career, and she should be very, very happy.
Yeah, she's 16-7 overall. And I forgot about the title shot she had over at Strikeforce when she lost to Marlise Konnen. That's the promise. She's come up short in all of her title shots. Yeah. But if she can win this one, she can be very proud of having that major title, the Bellator flyweight title, over an undefeated fighter in Juliana Velasquez, if she should get to that. But that is three in a row. She may have earned it. But she's beaten Shevchenko, Ken Young. She's beaten Jan Finney. Jessica Andrade, Lauren Murphy, Kaitlyn Chookagan, Jennifer Maya, Lucy Putilova, Deanna Bennett, Vanessa Porto. First loss on Watanabe. I mean, that's decent, dude. That's a really, really solid career. Just coming up short, just being the bridesmaid is the only problem. Maybe even the maid of honor in a couple, you know. But Gally from Toronto presented an interesting fact, too, about Liz Carmouche. She was the first woman ever to enter the octagon. Because if you'll recall, the first women's fight ever was Ronda Rousey versus Liz Carmouche. And Liz Carmouche entered first because Ronda Rousey was given the title.
Mm-hmm. As a fighter, can you name who the first one was not as a fighter?
To enter the octagon? Oh, Becky Lewis?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. She cornered on Fry and Dan Severn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unless Anderson, what's that lady, the announcer? Unless she went in there and anything.
I don't think she did.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Here's another one. Here's another bit of trivia. The first woman to ever get bit in the octagon was this Carmouche too, yeah. Remember when Ronda left her print on
Yeah,
taking her back. So anyway, joking obviously. And the other fights that took place at Bellator, you know, was the interim heavyweight title, Liz Carmouche got her win as well. This was Bellator 261, by the way. More fans are being seen now, so that's always a good thing. Sydney Outlaw defeated Miles Jury. Daniel White defeated Keone Diggs. Christian Edwards defeated Simone Bignon. John De Jesus defeated John Teixeira. So, you know, all the results there on MMA Junkie. If you go to our front page, you got some tabs at the very top. And on one of those, you'll see results. And if you click them, you can see not only everything that took place at Bellator 261, but the same goes for PFL week 2021, week 6, and UFC Fight Night 190. Let's move on to UFC Fight Night 190. Took place on Saturday. Ciryl Gane defeated Alexander Volkov. Unanimous decision, 250-45 and a 49-46. I thought it was going to be more like maybe a 49-46 and 248-47, but I was wrong. But Ciryl Gane goes, he was just more active, and that made me happy because he's really got nice skills.
He does. You know, he kind of reminds me of a little bit of Lyoto Machida, where he's just very technical. He knows when to throw. He knows when to get out of the way. But there are some times with Lyoto Machida where you get one version of him and then you get another. And I think that's what we kind of get with Gane. He's a heavyweight. So you got to imagine everybody in his division hits hard. There's a lot of damage that can be done to a heavyweight. So he's got like a good style to survive in the heavyweight division. The problem I think right now is the guys that he's faced. If you look at the guys that are at the top, those guys are just major pressure fighters. And I think that's going to be difficult to have that type of style against some of the elite in that division. It's going to become very difficult to be able to pull that off. So great for him. Awesome performance for him. I just don't know if he'll be able to keep doing that as he gets closer and closer to that elite three up there.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we'll put UFC Fight Night 190 talk aside for just a sec. The next card that's coming up is UFC 264, and that's going to feature our next guest, Max Griffin. He fights Carlos Condit, and it looks like they're placed maybe in the main event of the prelims. So that means these guys are going to put on a show. The UFC recognizes them, and they want to help that sell that last pay-per-view before the pay-per-view starts. We'll sort out Max, and we'll put him here on the screen, and we'll talk to him here about his big fight coming up at UFC 264 on July 10th. Dustin Poirier and Conor the Notorious McGregor will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier evened the score in January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN+ subscribers for $69.99, or sign up to get UFC 264 and an ESPN+ annual plan for $89.98. Visit ESPNplus.com/MMA Junkie. There he is, Max Payne. Yo. Yeah, how you doing, my man?
What's good? What's cracking? How y'all doing?
Doing good. Now, I see some blue skies behind you, so it ain't raining. So that plastic is a sweat a little. You want to run?
I got these shred skins. It's just a single-use sauna suit. So I'm just getting extra little sweat in. Extra little sweat in. How y'all doing?
Good. How you feeling, man? This is a big fight against, a welterweight legend, man. Carlos Condit's done a lot in this sport. You must be excited.
No, I'm pumped, dog. It's a wonderful experience, wonderful time, wonderful opportunity. I've actually wanted to fight Carlos since I was young, man, since I was a kid. So to get this fight now, when I finally figured everything out, it's amazing. Can you see me? Should I move or am I too dark?
We can see you. You're good. You're good. You're a little fuzzy, grainy, but we can see you. Don't worry. Don't worry. We can hear you, and we're excited to have you on. And tell me a little bit more about the Condit matchup. Was it out of respect, like you were a fan, and that's why you wanted to share the octagon with him, or did he rub you the wrong way and you want to knock him out? How did this come about?
When I used to watch him in WEC, you know, I used to watch him walk around the cage and mean mugging the camera, and I remember being like, I want to fight that guy. I want to fight that guy. Straight up. So now it's come full circle. I have nothing but respect for him. Legend of the sport. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's been there, done that with the best of them. Former champion. And it's my time, though, you know. All that stuff's out the window now. It's my time.
Man, I had a similar experience, except it was with Tank Abbott in the late 90s. The only difference is I didn't say, I want to fight that guy. I said, I wish somebody would fight that guy and kick his ass. And Don Fry put it on for me. But, yeah, you're right. You just see a fighter, and you kind of like have a love-hate where part of you is like, they're kind of cool. It reminds me of the guy that threw me out of a club one day, and I think that's what it was with me and Tank Abbott. He was a brawler out of HB, but he was great for the sport. I don't know if you remember him back in the day.
Oh, dude, Tank Abbott was one of the reasons I first started fighting. He was my favorite fighter when I used to watch the videos, the old school UFCs. Yeah. Tank Abbott was my favorite guy. He literally went in there and bashed heads and didn't give a shit. And I love it.
Max, that Condit fight, was Carlos Condit a name that was brought to you? Did you ask for him? Like you said, you've always wanted to fight him. How did it actually come about, and what was it like hanging up the phone knowing that was going to be your opponent?
Well, I remember I actually wanted to fight Carlos after I took that man's ear, Ramiz Brahimi, after I took his ear off back, you know, on the interview, I said I wanted to fight Carlos Condit. Sean Shelby said, no, he's going to fight Matt Brown. I was like, okay. But I was at this place, Crepes and Burgers, out in Sac with my family, and I got the call like 7 o'clock at night. Carlos Condit, UFC 264. I said, F yeah. I mean, it was way more animated than that. But, I mean, I accepted the fight that second. It took him 2 weeks. So we didn't know if we were going to get the fight. Almost 3 weeks, actually. That could have been, you know, I don't speculate or assume anything, but probably contract stuff. I'm grateful he took the fight. It was, we still planned for it. We still training for it, but 2 weeks of hearing nothing, you know, it's kind of nerve wracking. But we got the job done. Now it's time.
Hey, Max, like the last couple times we've talked to you, I'd say probably like the last two or three times, you've had this kind of new swag to you where I think you're starting to figure things out as far as like how to prepare for these guys and adding these new tools. They've made you like a really, really happy guy. Being where you're at now, could you say that you've now found like the correct recipe for Max Griffin? Like, are you at a point where you're very happy going into this fight, or do you feel like you're still learning, still trying to add new things here?
It's a mixture of both. Like, I am adding new things, but my stuff's working. My recipe's working. Yeah, I'm adding new things, but what I'm doing is working. It's effective. I feel like Salt Bae now. My recipe's good. I'm just throwing the stuff on top, and it's going to be a masterpiece. This July 10th will be my next greatest performance to date. I promise you. Have no doubts. 100% confidence. Oh, man. I actually had a dream last night that I killed someone, and I woke up stressed, and it's a sign of the times.
Hey, Max, you brought up Carlos Condit's stare, and that was one of the things that always stood with me when people would talk about some of the meanest stares. He had one, and I remember in the WEC days meeting him after a fight and just seeing how nice of a dude he is outside of that cage, and I asked him, like, how do you switch that on and off? Because that stare is so uncomfortable. When you see the stare, is it going to be one of those situations where you kind of want to out-stare him, or are you just going to kind of take it in?
I was thinking about that, you know. It's going to make me smile. It's going to make me smile. At the stare downs, that's the stare that you guys are going to like to see. That one's going to be great. That one's going to be the one that you're talking about right now. That one's going to be the one. But in the cage, it smiles. We'll see. But I can't let them take me off my game, you know. And my new game is having a good time and doing my thing. So I can't allow him to take me out of that. But I can't wait to look at him at the fucking face-off, bro. Can't wait.
Two things to finish up here off what Go said. Not only do you look happy, content, you look very, very confident, both in your interviews, pre and post fight, and during the fight on fight week. So that's awesome that you're feeling this, you know, at this point in your career. And then with Carlos Condit, fellas, it's not just the stare. He got this snarl too. You know what I mean? It's epic. He's definitely earned the respect of many out there. And I can't wait for the stare down and all that. We'll be here in Vegas, obviously. So we'll probably see it up close now with everything wide open. You know, we got most media attending, fans attending, so it's going to be fun. I already see the juices are flowing for you, Max. You can't wait to get on that run, right?
Bro, I'm on it, man. I'm on it. I'm on it. Someone posted something yesterday. Not saying I am, but they said Max is 3-3 in his last six, and you could say, arguably, he won 6 out of 6. I know I didn't, but those fights were close. I'm ready to go. And looking back at my shit, like, I've been good. We've talked about this before. We've talked about, you know, the fights that I've lost and stuff that hasn't gone my way. And those times are over, buddy. And to be on this stage, to be on the main prelim fight, you know, before the main card on one of the biggest cards ever again. First fight in Vegas, it's going to be so stupid. And really, you know, the mystique that Carlos has, the fan base that he has, oh bro, I'm going to absorb all those fans. And, man, I couldn't be any better.
I noticed you said again, and you're right. You have been on Miocic and Cormier, Holloway, Poirier too. Adesanya, Romero, the UFC throw in some of these pay-per-views is probably for a reason.
Yeah, I was on the Conor Diaz 2 on my debut.
Yeah, that's right. I guess I didn't scroll down enough. And on Big Fox, too. I remember seeing you on Big Fox,
though. Yeah, beating my Mike Perry.
Good stuff. All right, Max, thanks for the time. We really appreciate you squeezing us in. We'll see you in Vegas in a few weeks.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we'll see you. Man, it doesn't get any better than that guy goes. He fires me up every single time.
Now I'm fired up.
Covering it.
Now I'm fired up for that stare down. That Carlos Condit has one stare down where, as somebody in a living room watching it, I'm getting uncomfortable. So I have no idea what the fighters are thinking. So to know that Max might actually try and match that, dude, that's going to be epic. That just makes you want to watch the fight even more. And when you look at their styles, it's like those are just two tailor-made styles that you just can't wait for that fight.
And how great is it for him to tell the story of, I saw him fight, and I wanted to fight him, and now I get to fight him? You see a lot of high schoolers that hope that, you know, Jordan would be around or Kobe would be around or Shaq would be around because they just want to share the court with him someday, you know. And some have actually got to do it. Kobe actually got to do it in the early part of his career. He got to go up against Michael Jordan. So it's fun when they can do it both at their prime, like Bird and Magic or whatever. But it's also fun when you can just catch them at some point. So, you know, I'm happy for him, man. And like I said, he does a really good job of showing just how happy he is to be a professional prize fighter and to be doing the job. And seeing him with the plastic, too, you could just tell he's ready to put in the work. He did the interview. Boom. And let me tell you something. I don't know if you've seen those temperatures out there, but the Northwest is getting clowned. Like Washington, Oregon, and Northern Cal, they've gotten some really, really big-time heat. So I don't know if that run's going to be his favorite run of the camp this week.
Who was the fighter that we had in studio one time, and they said, not that they were afraid or anything like that, but they were fighting Wanderlei Silva, and they said that when Wanderlei started to do this, they had that moment of, holy shit, I'm fighting Wanderlei Silva. Like, it just kind of clicked to them. Like, this is somebody that I always admired watching, and now he's on the other side of me doing the death stare. I can't remember who it was, but I laughed so hard at that because it's so true. You know, like you just situations where you're used to watching somebody and now you're in front of them, you're competing against them. There's got to be like that oh shit moment. Like, I can't believe, think about in your life how many times people tell you you can't do something. And fighters are in a position now where I'm sure if there's any sport, right? It's not like you're saying, I'm going to pick up a football one day or I'm going to kick a soccer ball. Like, when you're saying, I want to be a fighter in a sport that a lot of people when I was growing up didn't accept that's a profession, that they made it sound like that was a hobby. Now you can tell them, not only did I do what I said I was going to do, I'm at the highest level right now. That's got to be like, these fighters have to have more oh shit moments than we know.
Yeah, I agree. If I had to take a guess, I remember Brian Stan was in our studio, but he also didn't have too many fond moments of facing Wanderlei Silva. But who knows? Maybe with him. I'd have to go back and see who you might be talking about. All right, so from one guest to the next one's ready to go. His name is Tim Means. He defeated Nicholas Dalby this past weekend at UFC Fight Night 190. So we'll sort him out, put him on the big screen here, and we'll be talking to the Dirty Bird.
Hi, this is Ghost from MMA Junkie Radio. The final chapter in the rivalry between Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor will be written on Saturday, July 10th at UFC 264. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99. Visit ESPNplus.com/MMAJunkie.
There he is, folks. One of the nastiest welterweights in all of mixed martial arts, Tim Dirty Bird Means. Congratulations, Tim, on your big win this past weekend. I really enjoyed your fight.
Right on. Thanks, guys. How's it going?
Good. How about yourself? How you feeling?
It's going. Getting ready to fly home. Been in Vegas long enough. It's time to go back to get to the real world, you know?
Vegas is one of those cities where I was a SoCaler. I lived in Santa Ana, the mean streets of Santa Ana, California. And so as a young man, I'd go to Vegas. It would chew me up and spit me out, you know, because gambling and partying and everything. So I know you don't get to do much of that, but you do go through a brutal weight cut in 100-degree weather, and then you get in a fucking fight. I mean, Vegas must honestly chew you guys up and spit you out. It's just a lot easier when you're going home with two checks.
It's a lot nicer taking all your money home, you know, so – It's a little brutal on the fact that we're in a sauna and we're cutting weight and then we have to walk outside and it's 108 outside getting to the next, you know, lobby or the next car or whatever. But for the most part, I feel like I come to Vegas and even in losses and fights, I get to leave and go home and put food on the table. So I feel like I win all around. So can't complain there.
What's it like when you get picked up at the airport and you do some hugging and kissing for the family and what's it like when you walk through the door? I mean, do you just make a beeline for your king-size bed and just take like a four-hour nap and say, leave me alone, and then it's family time?
You know, the family's cool. They meet me at the door when I get home. So, you know, they're probably, the kids are probably wanting to play some basketball or play some cornhole or something. So you got to tell the kids, they give you a quick minute, and then, you know, it's right back to the everyday life stuff. Usually my mother-in-law's cooked something. She came to Vegas this time and is hanging out. But, you know, I got a supportive family, and it always feels great to get home.
How can you even shoot baskets, man? Aren't your hands hurting?
You have to keep up with the kids, man. You can't let them see you're in pain, or they'll gobble you up and spit you out, you know?
I got you. All right. Well, listen, it was a great fight. And, you know, he had some moments too, you know, credit to him. But you won those first two rounds. You secured those first two rounds. And then in the third round, you did have to make an adjustment. I think a lot of that just came from all the experience of 20-plus fights at the highest level, fighting all kinds of different types of fighters. You know, you had to fight on instinct, used a lot of experience, and, you know, you were able to get that W. You know, that was very important. A lot of other fighters would not have been able to shake that off.
Yeah, man, I've been in those gunfights where, you know, I tried to punch my way out of being hurt before, and it didn't pan out. So had to go back to the drawing board and get back to the lab and, you know, correct those errors. And I was able to do it, you know, Saturday night. Dalby's was on a 5-fight win streak. He beat guys that I had lost to, and, you know, I wanted to get all those wins back in one night. So I think you hit it on the head where, you know, veteran fights, a number of times in the cage, you know, I found out after the fact that it was my I was one of 50 fighters that have 4 hours of fight time in the cage. So I think all that time really, really helped me out in there. I felt more calm and composed than ever. But, yeah, in the third round, he caught me in the nose pretty good. My nose looks pretty good today, not that crooked. But, you know, had to kind of weather the storm there. And it wasn't like he was trying to disengage and let go of the clinch anyway, so it made it easy to recover. But at the same time, he was throwing me off with his breathing. Like, sounded like he was tired right away in the fight with these big, deep, excessive breaths he was taking. But then he'd have these bursts and 5, 6, 7, 8 punch combos that he would throw out, and it was catching me off guard. So, you know, he's a dangerous guy, and we just had to keep a game face on and stay calm.
Tim, you've been to our studio before at Mandalay Bay, and the sports book is right there. And I particularly remember a memory of sitting with a bunch of casual fans, people that just kind of came in and were there to watch basketball, but they happened to see some UFC, right? And your fight came on, and I remember their way of watching a fight was, which one of these guys is going to be tougher? And I remember explaining to them, watch this guy, because you're one of the guys that I think does a lot of thinking during fights, and you're very good at adjustments and setting things up. And I was trying to explain to them things that you were doing before you were doing them. So I guess my question to you is, because you've logged in all this time, when you're in a fight, how much of that is instinct and how much is that setting guys up, thinking about things? How much thinking is going on in that cage for you?
I used to think a lot, and then I'd get behind on the pace and be behind on pulling the trigger. And now we've put in so much time in our craft and, you know, the clinch work and takedowns and punches that you're just on autopilot. You're doing your best. Everything that we've worked on in the gym, you're putting into the game plan in the cage. I kind of fall off task sometimes because it's so easy to get in those brawls and want to hear the fans cheer and want to hear, like, you're like at Apex, you can hear Daniel Cormier and Paul Felder and those guys hooting and hollering from their stand. So you want to get people on their feet and get them excited. But at the same time, we've worked months and months and hours of sticking to this game plan. And these last, you know, 4 or 5 fights that I've had where I was able to do exactly what we've been working on in the lab and at the gym and stuff. I feel like I turned a real corner with that stuff, with being able to be patient and being able to apply my tools and apply what my coaches have been showing and what we've been working on as a team. And I can hold my head up high with knowing that everything that we're doing at the gym, I'm starting to apply in the cage on fight night.
If you were to look at yourself from, say, 4 years ago, what would you say is the main difference in Tim Means going into his fights and then after the fights?
I'm calmer. I'm not fighting quite as angry anymore. And, you know, if I drop a dude and knock him down, I'm not running in zealous and trying to get this crazy finish. Trying to be a surgeon. You know, I like to think I'm a doctor in there, and, you know, might not have got these cool accolades in school or whatever to be a veterinarian or whatever, but I feel like I do cool surgery. And, you know, I feel I'm still an exciting fighter, even getting a little older now. So people tune in, and it makes me feel good when I have the respect of my peers and stuff. So I would say listening and my ability to apply the information now would be a huge turnaround.
Now, when would you like to perform surgery again? You had an interesting way of phrasing things when you talked about you just want to fight, you know, and so the name doesn't necessarily, you know, you don't think about that as much, but you want to keep cashing checks. So I know that you're down to fight. How soon do you want to fight? Because now you've your body's had at least 36 hours to decompress. So how soon would you like to fight? And then since then, have you thought of a name or anything, a certain card, you know, anything like that?
Well, they gave me a mandatory 21-day rest period, you know, just a violent fight. And, you know, took some, I got a couple little marks on my face and my forehead and stuff. But, yeah, I got buddies. My wife's getting ready for a title fight in boxing in Iowa here in about 6 weeks. I got some teammates that are fighting as well. I just got to get back, be a good teammate, help my people out like they helped me out in my fights. But hell, you know, I think a fight with a guy like Nick Diaz would be fun as hell. He says he's willing to fight anybody, but he seems to be only chirping at the guys with big, huge names or whatever. But I've been doing this a long time, and if he wants a fun fight, I think that'd be dynamite. And, you know, we'll see if we couldn't get that dude out of there real quick. He comes with a cool following and a lot of fans behind him or whatever, but it'll just be me and him locked in a cage. But anyone in the top 10, hell, anyone in the top 15, you know, I saw Matt Brown one the other day. I'd like to get one of those fights back. You know, he beat me here in Vegas. But I just feel I'm a completely different fighter than I was at those times. I'm calmer, cooler, better looking, and just, you know, applying things, and everything's kind of falling into place. So right now, you know, I would like definitely a top 10 guy, top 15 guy.
That works for me, man. You know, just throwing it out in existence sometimes is what works. We just talked to Max Payne Griffin, and he was telling us about a fight that he won before, and he told Sean Shelby, how about Carlos Condit? It didn't happen right away, but maybe Shelby filed it mentally, and you know, years later, an opportunity came up. He got the fight he wanted. It's a guy that he had watched at WEC. And now he gets the fight, you know, a former WEC champ, former UFC interim champ. So he's ecstatic, you know. So just throwing it in existence sometimes is awesome. So I'm down to watch 505 against 209. I'm down to watch, you know, back with Matt Brown. Heck, I'd even watch the winner of Griffin and Condit, you know, whatever. Just putting it out there. And I think another thing that's very important is timeline. So we just talked about somebody that fought in Brown and somebody that's fighting in Griffin. I think what's important is timeline. But I also know you love your kids. So hopefully you can enjoy the summer and maybe do something like in September, October too.
Yeah, we got, I took over that wrestling program there in Moriarty. You know, I'm the head coach there for the boys now. So we got a busy fall coming up, you know, but, the kids make it easy to train and make it easy to get to my own gym. I expect them to be in practice. So it's easy for me to lead by example. September, October would be cool to get another fight. But, heck, the way things have been going, you know, I get short notice calls quite often. So as long as my body's saying we're good, we're ready to go, we can make the weight, I'm ready to get in fun fist fights. So finish out the year with a bang, you know, go into the wrestling season, do that stuff, get Brenda ready for her fight. So sky's the limit when it comes to getting into fist fights. You got, you know, those nerves never go away when you're backstage, you know, so, but learn how to control them and not have those adrenaline dumps, things like that. But there's nothing like fight night. Nobody can compare any job they do to like fight night. So, I'm excited to still begin to do this stuff and, getting to sit here and talk to you cool guys. So, life is grand, my friends.
Thank you, sir. And we always enjoy covering you pre and post fight. Whether we can get them both or one of the two, we got to talk to the Dirty Bird. And I think we've been doing a lot of it. You've been in the UFC almost a decade. I think next year will be a decade. These 20 fights that we talked about, some great moments on, you know, pay-per-views and fight nights and Big Fox, ESPN. It's awesome. So keep doing your thing. Yeah. A lot of people know who you are. You deserve a lot of respect. And you've done a lot, you know, especially in that welterweight division. I still remember you started off, I think, as a lightweight. Or, yeah, lightweight. That's crazy.
That was a long time ago, many skinny days ago. But, now making weight and getting on those scales, I don't even know how that was happening just because I was maybe 20, 19 years old, 22 years old, whatever. But, those were unfun weight cuts. But, hell, they leave impressive stories to tell, and just the fact I was able to get to that weight and meet some cool people and fight some cool guys. So, you know, I can't complain on those things.
Congrats on your win and good luck to your wife and her boxing match. That's awesome, man.
I appreciate it.
A couple that both throw down.
Yeah, she's a little meaner than I am. Just I'm glad she cooks dinner, so we're good.
She means business too, huh? All right, I got you.
Yeah, she's mean.
All right. Thanks, Tim, for the time. Take care.
Awesome. Later, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. There you go. Tim Means. How often do you think they have to hear that corny joke? He means business. Oh.
Over and over, yeah, it's got to be a lot.
I think it's my goal to always sneak it in there every time we talk to him. Just one way or another, I got to do it. But when I was watching the fight on Saturday, I was like, all right, who's going to launch this one first on Twitter? And sure enough, somebody
put it out.
Tonight.
It was like in the first couple seconds.
Who?
It was in like the first couple seconds of the fight. Like it barely started, and somebody said.
Yeah, Tim means business tonight. He means business every fight. But I think it's inevitable. You just got to do it, you know. Anyway, listen, we got just a few minutes here. We'll go a few minutes over just because I want to put to bed UFC Fight Night 190. Tanner Boser defeated Ovince Prue. Folks, it doesn't look like he used his fingers to get up from the cage and then subsequently knock Ovince Prue out. I think St. Prue's team wants to appeal. But trust me, on Fight Night, I thought, hey, did he grab the cage? And then when they showed the replay, it looks like at least three fingers are clear, you know, from if he did it with his pinky or maybe the fourth finger or the ring finger, I think. But there's a pad that blocks it. But to me, it looks like a fist, and he just postured up, no grab, and that's that. And, you know, they have one ref outside, which I believe was Herb Dean, and Jason Herzog was the in octagon, I almost said in-ring, in octagon referee, or referee in the octagon would be easier. And they talked, and so that's that. Congrats to Tanner Boser on that win. He shakes off a two-fight losing streak, I think, maybe even three. Timur Aliyev defeated Ronnie Barcelos. Andre Feely and Daniel Pineda went to a no contest because of an eye poke, but to be fair, and Pineda said it too, Feely was kicking his ass. Tim Means, who we just talked to, defeated Nicholas Dalby, and Nato Moicano got a win over Jai Herbert. But, boy, that guy's always going to hear, boy, his chin. You know, he hears that a lot in every fight. Because when he does get hit, you know, sometimes this reaction kind of leads you to believe that he's more hurt than most people get hurt from a punch like that. But to his credit, he also stood there and fought. So at some point, you gotta say the chin's there. And it's holding up. Poor GSP's the worst one of that. He gets knocked out by Matt Serra, and all we heard was he's got a poor chin for, like, the next – decade. Meanwhile, he goes on to become arguably the greatest fighter ever. Continuing on here, Kennedy and Chuck Wu defeated Danilo Marquez. Shavkat Rachmanov defeated Michelle Perzares. Jeremiah Wells, wow, beautiful KO over Warley Alves. Big favorite Alves was too. Marcin Pacino defeated Isaac Villanueva. Body kick folded him in half. Julia Vila, who looks great, by the way, man. She defeated Julia Storolenko. Charles Rosa defeated Justin James. I didn't think 30-27. I thought definitely 29-28. But I also thought there was a chance maybe Justin James, because those heavy hands are always in play, might get a call or two, and maybe he'd win the split. 30-27, I don't think I agreed with. But that fight was compelling because James has boasted about betting on himself. He's a local Extreme Couture guy. Says he doesn't regret it, but I'll be curious to talk about him, see how serious he was, if he really did the whole thing, or if that's just something to get the attention. It's not easy to just walk around and put, you know, if you put more than 10K on a fight, you usually got to go through an approval process, and I'm not so sure that they'll do it, especially on an undercard fight. I got to look into that a little bit. I'm not saying he's lying. You probably could go to three different places like William Hill, MGM, you know, BetMGM.
I think they posted it.
Did they?
I thought it was posted like on Instagram or something.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. I guess he did. But I'm hoping he didn't and he just said he did, because I think the story's interesting. And if he put a good chunk, then, you know, it's good enough. But I just wouldn't want him to lose his whole purse. Damn, that sucks. And Demir Hadzovic defeated Yancy Medeiros. They were back at the Apex, so no fans, no gate. That's that. The next fight card for the UFC will be UFC 264, July 10th, Poirier versus McGregor 3. So the UFC is off this week. And PFL, they're done with their regular season, so they don't come back until August. So we have a little bit of a break in terms of those two promotions. I believe, let me see, I'm checking to see if Bellator is on this week or not. My computer's starting to freeze.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Yeah, there's just a nice break here as we go into the holiday. And finally, one more time, thank you again for all your messages about Max. Just, you know, I think we talked about it last Monday and a lot of it on Thursday, but geez, it was over the weekend. I kept getting a lot of messages and a lot of them from Junkie Nation. So thank you, folks. I guess every day it does get a little easier to deal with, but the memories are still there and your heart's still broken. At least mine is. I can probably say the same for Goes. But that's just, you know, part of life. But a lot of you said some really nice, kind things and they all helped tremendously. So thank you for it.
Yeah, yesterday was a rough day. It was one of the rougher ones. But like George said, every day is a little bit different. You know, we have to figure out what we're just so used to him being part of a routine in our life and how we do things. And now that he's not here, all that changes, you know. And some of it's good, and then some of it is just heartbreaking. It really is. Like, But yeah, it's amazing to see the reach that he had, and don't be afraid to reach out. You know, it's really helped out. I've had some nice conversations, and at the very least, I've remembered who my real friends are, you know, and who really cares. So thank you for doing all that.
For sure. And one more time, folks, Dustin Poirier and Conor the Notorious McGregor will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier evened the score this past January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN+ subscribers for $69.99 or sign up now to get UFC 264 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for $89.98. That's the deal, folks, the latter one. Visit ESPNplus.com/MMAJunkie. That's ESPNPLUS.com/MMAJunkie. All right, folks, we are going to bounce on out of here. We'll see you all on Thursday. Look out for video franchises of Spinning Backlick and Legend the Legend and Rankings Report. You can find them there on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. Plus, we're also got a lot of interviews lined up that Goes and I will be doing. Some of those get recapped on the site. You see video highlights that go with it. But if you ever want to watch the full interview, which we always advise you to do, again, go to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. That's where you'll get everything in whole, not just us, but the staff and all of the interviews that they do. All right, folks, enjoy your day and go out there and be a champion.